Welcome Builders from Lakeland, Florida. This is the Build Your Success Leadership Podcast with your host, Brian Brogen. We're going to empower and equip you to build yourself and then build others. Now, let's build up with your host, Brian Brogen.
Hello, Builders. We would love to welcome you to this episode of the Build Your Success Podcast. Here at the Build Your Success Podcast, we like to build you so you can build others. We do that through our coaching, training, and speaking events, but we also do that through amazing guests we bring to the program. I'm excited today to have Mark Musselman with us. I became acquainted with Mark over his internet, some of his work, and I wanted to share Mark with you today. So, Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me this morning, Ryan. I really appreciate you creating the space to have this conversation.
Thanks so much. If you will, introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about what you do and why you do it.
Yeah, great. Well, I basically identify myself as an executive coach, do speaking as well. And then I work with a lot of groups as a facilitator. I've been doing that really professionally since about 2009. You know, I was part of a family-owned manufacturing company that was around in my family for 50 years. And in the last 10 years of its existence, I'm not sure if it's felt blessed. I ended up as a CEO of that company, and it was an amazing company. And then we went through some financial challenges and went through bankruptcy as a family, lost the ownership of the business. The business continued and has transacted several times since. So when I came out of that, bankruptcy period, it's like, I didn't really have any direction and really wondered what should I do next. And I said, well, the thing that made a difference for me as a young CEO was finding a coach that could help me improve my set of skills so that I could be the best version of that. And so I just basically went out and I found the guy who I had originally hired. I apprenticed with him for a year, which meant that I had to make some pretty big investments and decisions. And I learned the trade, and then I put a shingle on the wall, and I've been doing that ever since. So that's about 2009 to now. And there have been a couple times over those 15 years when I've actually stepped out of that role and stepped into a role of running as a CEO a couple of my consulting and coaching clients, their companies. So all told, about 15 years running companies, and then a bunch of other years working with executives.
Love that. Those thoughts and the stuff that you share was about your resume, if you will. But man, think about that apprenticeship where you realized, I enjoyed what this person did for me, and now I'm going to go apprentice with them. I think that is amazing, because some CEOs would leave a business and say, hey, I got this.
Yeah.
You said, I need some apprenticeship. So that's really cool. So let me ask you the question we ask all of our guests. What does leadership and being a leader mean to Mark Musselman?
Yeah, I love the question. And one of the things that I'm aware of in my work is I often go into a client, and you probably have a similar experience, and I ask the same question, because I think, generally speaking, in our culture, we use the word leadership and the idea of leadership conceptually. But when asked, a lot of people just don't have any working definition. So, I think it's basically the ability to, as an individual, touch, move, and inspire others as we collectively find ourselves in the pursuit of a set of common objectives. And in all the while, in as you endeavor to do that, create a culture that promotes growth, and that's personal and professional, that, sort of embeds itself in effective communication. And, this idea of we get this done together as a team. So that's what I would say I think leadership is the set of skills to do all that. So.
Oh, that just tees up one of the questions I had for you. Great answer on leadership, but you work to create cultures of growth. And I didn't know this about you until you just said it when I asked you to introduce yourself, but you come from family business. I too come from a family construction business. And there are some amazing things about family construction businesses. And then there's some nuances with family construction or family businesses, let's just say. Working with your family is great in some ways, and then other ways it's very challenging. How did you create a culture of growth in a family business? Tell us how you did that.
Yeah, well, first of all, I say to people all the time, somewhat jokingly, like it's with great fear and trepidation that I encourage you to go further down the path of, you know, being in a family business. It, you know, like you and I both know, it has incredible blessings. And, you know, I loved way more of my time in that family business and celebrate all those great moments than I do the other, you know, parts that had lots of adversity. But it's challenging, right? It's unlike any other business because what happens when you enter a family business is you have all the family dynamics that are at play that complicate and confuse and interfere with what would normally happen in a business that wasn't family. And there's a really traditional model. It's actually, I think, developed out of Harvard. I'm going to give credit to Harvard, and it may not be there, but it shows this family model where you have a circle of family, a circle of ownership, and a circle of management. And what happens oftentimes in a family business is all three of those circles collapse and they get basically driven by and overridden by the family. So sometimes you'll be in a period where things are really challenging and you think you're having a conversation that's about the business, but what you're really doing is arguing amongst yourselves and working out issues you had with your brother when you were, you know, like 14 that are still there. And so family businesses have a whole other element that make it that much more challenging to achieve growth, to achieve alignment, to get on the same page. And unlike a normal non-family business where there's a hierarchy and, you know, there's a person at the top who would say, this is what we're doing, hopefully align people to that. In a family business, lots of families feel freedom to say anything in any way. It lacks decorum. It lacks, you know, all those things. So, you know, I love family businesses. And I can imagine in the building industry that there are many, many, many family businesses, you know, and so it's just be aware of what you're in and then commit yourselves as a family. This is what we did to understanding some of those distinctions, like what it really means when we're encountering a family issue as distinct from a business issue, and then role specificity. So if I am a family member working in the business, but I don't have any ownership, that's a different role than if I have ownership, but I'm not working in the business, you know, so it's all that trying to peel those circles apart. I think that is critical to a healthy culture as a family, but and one that can promote growth.
Wow, Mark, great answer. You know, it's interesting and maybe ironic that there's those three layers in that core chart. But in my mind, I was thinking like a core chart. Because statistically speaking, most families, businesses don't make it past the third generation. And it's because of those things you alluded to where there's just no guidelines. There's no trust, that freedom to just speak your mind because that's my family member. It's not really my coworker. There's the professionalism. There's some boundaries there that get moved out of the way that should be kept in place, as you alluded to. So that's great. So we talked about the culture of growth inside of a family business. Now, what about, I know you consult businesses that are not family businesses. How do you encourage them to create this culture of growth?
Yeah. And you're right. It's probably a balance. I work with about half family owned companies and half not. And I don't really distinguish between the two unless we get into that other conversation we just had. Because really what fundamentally has to happen for any organization to have healthy, sustainable, you know, growth that is profitable and that basically generates the kind of results that you want in a business is you have to have everybody who's involved on the same page, right? And so my work really always, the entry point is almost always with a conversation on, tell me, you know, what are your, again, high aspirational mission, vision, values? What is it that kind of organizes you as a group of people? And then when you have those things that are commonly understood and they can be articulated, and everybody kind of buys into it. And that's like, where are you wanting this organization to go? And then beyond that, like, how are you going to get there? And then really breaking down the activity from here's who we are organizationally, here's what we stand for, here's where we're going, and then here's how we're going to get there, and here's how every single person who's involved in moving the company towards those goals and objectives, you know, owns his or her own set of responsibilities. And then there's a, you know, a great culture of being highly accountable. You know, and it's funny, I had a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday, and we were talking about, like, in the world of professional athletics, let's just take football as an example. If you show up and you do not perform well as a center, and there's another five guys behind you who can snap the ball, you will not stay in that position for very long. So you consistently have to work on your skills and your craft and your profession. And one of the things that I find, unfortunately, in the business world often is people get into a role and then they grow old, or they grow, you know, basically complacent in the role. So another part of this is, you're like, what am I doing every day to make sure that I have the right tools and I'm the best person to be performing that role in this organization, and take accountability for how I show up every day, and assuming and trusting that everyone else on the team is doing the same.
Mark, that's great. You took on a lot of stuff in that answer. I do want to ask you, you know, you talked about people finding common understanding of values, vision, mission. I have a $100 challenge. When I go into a business and do an exercise, I challenge them and give $100. If anyone in the room can give me their, by memory, can give me their company's mission or vision statement. I've only lost $100 one time. And I think about, you know, and then after, you know, I go through that exercise, when they don't know the mission statement, I'm like, you're taking a salary from, this is how you earn your living. It's going to turn into a large sum of money over years. Can you memorize a 3-sentence mission statement?
Right. Yeah. I completely identify with you. I'm surprised you lost $100. I mean, I don't have that same challenge. I love it. I might just borrow it from you because it's a really great one. But I see the incongruency all the time. Like, I'll walk into a business and, you know, they'll have gone to the length of, you know, making a beautiful poster, and they put their values up. And the very first one might be, you know, we believe in our people. And then I get into these, you know, quiet, door shut, one-to-one conversations with people, and there is a major disconnect between that person's experience of that value and what's on the wall. So there's not only what you said, which is just, I call it like an ante in a poker game. Me knowing why it is that I'm here and what our aspirational statements are. The other part is, does the organization actually live that way? Do we behave in alignment with those set of values and our mission and what we're, and more often than not, that's this piece that's broken down. I personally refer to it, and professionally refer to it, as conscious leadership, because I think my experience has been that about 97%, maybe even a little higher, of people who walk in do not have a relationship with that, right? So they're just unconsciously walking in, doing the work, disconnected from all of what we've talked about. And that will produce a result. It'll just never be optimized.
We hope you're enjoying today's podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Build Consulting Services. Are you ready to reduce workplace conflict, reduce employee turnover, and increase your productivity? If you're ready to put Brian to work for your company, give him a call at 863-800-9658 or email him at brianb@buildcs.net. Now, back to today's episode.
Wow, Mark, it sounds like you and I have similar experiences. And the one time I did lose the $100, I was facilitating a team building event for about 12 people. It happened to be for a not-for-profit. All 12 of them did it just like that. And so I asked the CEO later, I was like, how did you achieve that? I said, because this is the only time I've lost $100. So I gave it to the charity as opposed to $100 to each one of them. But I asked him that question. He said, listen, I want the guy mowing the yard or the gal mowing the yard to know they're mowing the yard and he went into the mission statement.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just we're mowing the yard. We're mowing the yard because the yard needs to look good so we can achieve our mission statement. And I just thought that was unbelievable leadership skills from a CEO to recognize everybody on the team needs to understand what I'm doing is not just some mundane task. What I'm doing benefits the mission.
Yeah. Well, there's a great, and you may have heard this analogy or this metaphor. There's a guy, and this will fit right into your group of builders, but there's a guy who's, you know, a mason, and he's putting bricks into a wall, and somebody walks up to him and runs into the first mason and says, "What are you doing? I'm putting bricks in this wall." And then the guy continues and he walks down and he comes around the corner. There's another mason and he's also putting bricks in the wall. And the guy says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm building the foundation for a cathedral that's going to be the home to." And all of a sudden, the exact same activity, one of the guys is like, you know, alive with this vision of a cathedral and the millions of lives that will be impacted by his, you know, putting the bricks in the exact right spot so that it can hold, you know, that's the difference, right?
Yeah, and Mark, as we are in this new multi-generational workforce, I shouldn't say new because there's always been multi-generations of workforce, but there's an emphasis on the names. I tell people all the time, I say, you know, some people used to complain about millennials, now they're a large portion of the workforce. But I'd say, you know what they complained about my dad's generation? They smoked pot and made love. You know, they're useless. That's what they said about my dad's generation. And now, you know, that same group of people are complaining about the next generation, right?
Right.
So when we recognize that, but then what I've come to respect of our millennials and our Gen Ys is that they want to know what the mission and the purpose is. They really want to know what it is. Like it's important to them to understand that. For me, when I first started in the construction industry, it was, I need a job. You know, give me a paycheck, tell me what to do. I don't need to know all that. However, this younger generation wants to know, hey, what's our purpose? Why are we doing this? I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that sense that they have is a sense that could easily be an overarching sense that we all should have, right? Ideally, every one of us would know, what is it that has me waking up every day and making a choice to take my skills, my time, and invest them in the pursuit of whatever it is that the company I'm working for or my own company is up to. And you know, I always have a conversation with my clients that says, you know, when was the last time you thought about how you think about why you do what you do? Like every day, it's no different than if I love sports or I love other, like an orchestra. I mean, all those people who are in the orchestra are practicing their craft every day so that they can maintain the seat in the orchestra. Because if they fall off their skills at all, you know, and they're all on the same song sheet, we know all the metaphors, but if they don't work on it to that degree, they'll be replaced with somebody who is. And so, you know, I it's like that keeping the saw sharp every day. Like, why am I here? What is my role? How do I contribute? How does everyone else, you know, compliment me in their work so that we can achieve, you know, growth and the outcomes that we desire to achieve?
Mark, that's great. And I hear you say that and tying those two together, where when I understand the mission and I understand our values, that's going to make me have a desire to improve every day.
Yeah.
If it, I get stagnant and complacent, then I'm not, I don't have any desire to grow. So, yeah. So interesting.
Yeah. And I was thinking, you know, when you had shared that this is all, you know, designed to support builders, right? Think about how many opportunities there are for builders to identify with the big vision of what it is they're doing, whether you're a framer, whether you're, you know, a plumber, whether you're an electrician, I mean, all the different trades, people that come together to create a home or an office building or whatever it is that they're creating. And instead of just seeing it for the work that I'm doing that, you know, allows the drywall to go on, I'm actually constructing a place that's going to be the, you know, the house of a family with, and that's just a lot more inspirational to me than it is to get stuck in just the actual tactical work every single day.
100% agree with you. In fact, my career took me to a launch pad, man. I mean, here's a guy barely graduated high school, and I'm standing on a launch pad to do some work on it. So it's just amazing. And then to realize turning some wrenches and taking some plates and building some cantilever platforms have allowed me to get here to be part of a missile program. So just it's when you realize the connect the dots, if you will, and back to what we're talking about, if you can connect those dots for your team, then they're going to be inspired. And the one that knows he's laying bricks for a cathedral versus the one that just knows he's laying bricks. That's a great analogy. So let's talk about, and this is a great segue for this. So closing the gap between people's vision and the day-to-day activities that produce results. So this is a great time. We've had this conversation about vision, mission, and how we do it, but these closing that gap, how do you do that?
Well, that's a great question, and I think everything boils down ultimately to communication, right? So, and you and I both know from being in the number of conversations that if you ask anybody what's the single biggest challenge that organizations face, it's communication. And so I think the gap gets closed by owners, by leaders, by people who have an inherent responsibility to share, and then let's just say to direct the activity of others. So there's no question. And then to find a way to support all the work through a lens of accountability, and then stopping. So I got to be able to stop and just gauge, are we on track? Are we off track? If we're on track, keep doing what you're doing. We were clearly on the same page, and you understand everything needs to occur for you to do what you're doing. If we're not, then let's just pause and identify where the course corrections are, right? And then work swiftly to make those course corrections to get us back in the cycle of being aligned and you performing all the things that you're designed to perform that live into our set of organizational objectives and outcomes. So I think that it to me, it's communication and then supported by this idea of accountability and course correcting.
Love that. And for course correction, I happen to be a pilot. And I'll tell you that small inputs have big consequences. So you don't have to change the world to make course correction. You can course correct by a degree. You can course correct by 3 degrees. And then you can get back on track. And I use an analogy of what we call checkpoints in aviation. I don't set out for a destination from A to B and just wait till I find out I'm off course when I should be at destination B. Along the way, I've got checkpoints and I'm looking for those and I'm saying, okay, this is on time. I'm in the right area. But if I'm not, I got to get back on course. And the closer you have those checkpoints, the closer sooner you can correct. And so I encourage businesses to do that, as sounds like you do as well. So just different ways to look at that. So I'm going to ask you the final thing here. We're doing some show prep and research. I understand that you like to talk about the conscious leader, and conscious leadership. Tell me more about that. How do you become a conscious leader?
Well, it begins with just an awareness. Like, let's just start there at the point of waking up to the idea that as I approach what it is that I do professionally, I have a choice from the very outset. And I'll just use a particular day. Let's just say any day. So you and I, in preparation for this particular call, you went through some things. I went through some things that we did in the service of anybody who's listening, right? And so you were thinking, I was thinking, what are some great questions? How can I thoughtfully answer those questions? That's the work of this environment. Well, it's no different than if I were going to, approach my job and I'm thinking to myself as I prepare for the day, like when I think about being the best version of myself as, and you can fill in the blank, let's just say, let's just say a framer, right? What are some adjectives? What are some characteristics that I want to identify so that I can check myself as I go through the day, as I approach the job site, right? Who am I likely to interact with? Who am I likely to encounter? And who do I want to choose when I encounter them to be. And it's just like, okay, I could, there's a default mechanism, and then there's a conscious mechanism. And then really, what is the work that I'm up to today? What is the outcome I'm committed to creating today? You know, how am I most likely going to create that? What happens if I come into a place of conflict or adversity with somebody who hasn't done his or her, you know, part of the project? How do I want to approach that? What's going to optimize my ability to continue to move the project forward towards completion? That's a whole set of conscious thought, right? As opposed to walk into the job site, you know, thinking about already where I'm going to eat lunch, you know, kind of feeling a little disgruntled and maybe frustrated that, you know, Bob isn't here and, you know, all the thing. And that's an unconscious response to, more of a reaction to, instead of proactively preparing me to actually come into that environment and be the absolute best version of who I'm committed to being, because that's how I want to show up in the world.
Mark, as you went through that dialogue, about the first 30 seconds, I was thinking proactive versus reactive, and you finished it up well. So you and I can have a whole nother conversation on this conscious leadership. And we may schedule that for another day, but for now, we're going to have to close the podcast out. I want you to share with our listeners where they can find more about you and how they can reach out to you.
Well, thank you again. I really appreciate it. It's been a great conversation. I can't tell you how appreciative I am of the thoughtfulness that you used to engage me in this conversation. So I can be reached, basically email is the best way, and it's Mark with a K at MX5consulting.com. That's the easiest way for people. I also have a website, which is www.mx5consulting.com. Either one of those.
I'll be sure to include both of those in the show notes. And for the listeners, do me a favor, go wherever you're listening to this podcast, leave us an honest review and rating, share this podcast with others. Do this. Remember to build yourself and to build others. Thank you.
Want to learn how to build yourself and build your team? Visit www.buildcs.net and learn about Brian's programs, special offers, and more. Build yourself and then build others.